What sort of things do you pay attention to when you are in the Arctic in terms of fueling and hydration? How does that work? In today's episode, we get to hear about Bob's recent trip to the Arctic, specifically the Finland area, where he participated in a five-day winter multi-sport adventure, doing different sports each day in these very cold conditions. Welcome back to the Inside Sports Nutrition Podcast, your source for all things sports nutrition related. This show is hosted by myself, Dina Griffin, and my co-host, Bob Sebahar. We are both registered dietitians and board-certified specialists in sports dietetics with combined professional experience exceeding 40 years. And our job and mission here is to translate nutrition and sports science research to real life and give you some awesome interviews and conversations with a variety of experts and athletes so you can enhance your knowledge to also optimize your health, your fitness, and athletic performance. So in this episode, you're going to hear how Bob managed his nutrition and hydration, some good tips he learned along the way in these very cold conditions, lots of snow, sleeping in huts, and having a lot of other challenges, so how he navigated all of that. So this is a good one. If you do have a good, fun, cold weather adventure in your future, you're going to get some good tips out of this episode. Before we get to the show, I wanted to let you know I'm co-hosting a free webinar for women 35 and older with my colleague, Dr. Colleen McGinnis. She's a women's strength coach, doctor of physical therapy, and we've tag-teamed to offer this free webinar to go over our six top reasons that you may be experiencing some unwanted changes in body composition, or perhaps just haven't been able to shift body comp the way you've been wanting. So free webinar, March 18th is the date for our webinar. You could head over to nutritionmechanic.com, hit the events page under resources, and you'll find the link. Or you can go over to my Instagram, Nutrition Mechanic, in the bio and find that. So that's for all women over 35. Free webinar, March 18th. Okay, let's get to episode 120. All right, Bob. Well, you recently had quite an adventure that I don't even know too much about, which is why we're going to chat about it today. But you traveled to a fun, unique destination and did some cool adventuring outdoors. So we're going to talk today about your experience with this multi-day adventure, I'll call it right now, and then you can fill us in. But good morning, Bob. Tell us about your recent trip, where you went and what you were up to, and then we're going to get into some details, understanding some of the nutrition aspects and a few other angles that might have come into the story.
Yeah, thanks, Dina, and good morning to you also. So I was able to travel to Finland above the Arctic Circle. So I don't know how many people can actually say that. And the first thing I think that comes to mind is, brr, it's cold. Yes, it was very cold, and we'll get into that. But the reason for going there was to participate in the Finland Arctic Challenge. This was the first year that Rita from Arctic Escapades put this on. There were 13 of us that traveled to Lapland, Finland, which is, if anyone knows, that's kind of the place where St. Nicholas kind of hangs out and all of his reindeer. Awesome. So it was really cool. And you alluded to the stages. So what we did, the event itself, it was not a race. It was just an event, right? It was just a fun event. You could kind of do whatever you wanted to do. But for 5 days, we did something different in terms of a winter activity. Okay. So on day one, we snowshoed. On day two, we ran in snow. That was fun. We can't wait to chat about that. On day three, we dog sledded and snowshoed later in the day. On day four, we Nordic skied. And that was more like backcountry. So think of like cross-country skis, skate skis, the really skinny skis, but they're thicker. And they're kind of like snowshoes. You could go anywhere with these, which was totally cool. But no edges, like no alpine skiing, had no edges on them. So that made it challenging to turn sometimes if we had to turn. And then the last day, was kind of my happy place. I was on two wheels and we were fat biking
Oh,
all
how
around.
fun.
And all of this was actually all of it except for the dog sledding was taken place take took place in a national park. And I'm not going to try to pronounce this national park, but it was one of the, I believe there's seven national parks in Finland. Don't quote me on that, but just gorgeous terrain. You know, just think of white and pine trees and so much snow everywhere and just freezing cold temperatures, like freezing cold.
Yeah, did you start then, like you had a home base and then you'd start from there, or did they have to kind of shuttle you out to some of the other parts?
So Monday morning, we were shuttled to the national park. So we took a little bus and we went there, and then we started our snowshoe event. And then what we did throughout the 5 days is we actually went from lumberjack hut to lumberjack hut. So it's kind of like a hut trip, if you will. So
Okay.
these lumberjack huts were totally cool because this is like way back in the days, and I say that it was probably, I don't know, 70, 80 years ago, lumberjacks in the area who were working would build these huts, obviously for themselves, right? And then when they were done lumberjacking the area, they would tear down these huts, go to their next location and rebuild them. Like it was amazing just to kind of be able to be in these lumberjack huts. So we stayed in total in three lumberjack huts because one night or one lumberjack hut we stayed in 2 nights in a row. So it was pretty bare bones, D. So we went kind of point to point throughout the national park to these huts, but you know there was no running water. There was electricity. There were no, you know, standard toilets. So,
Okay.
you know, if you can imagine having to go in, you know, an outhouse and doing your thing in, you know, 15, 20 below zero,
Ooh.
you're not spending a lot of time there. Let's just say that.
And getting it done real quick like. And
Yeah,
how cold?
you kind of
How
know, yeah, you go in and you get out as quick as possible.
What was the temperature range then, like from morning to midday? Or did you
Yeah.
have a good feel for that?
I didn't know the progression in the day because I only kind of asked, and you know, as an aside, I brought my phone with me, and the only time I actually turned it on was to take photos. But here's the thing, it was so cold, and the first 3 days, we're talking, you know, when we started our adventure, it was usually between minus 13 and minus 17
Okay.
degrees Fahrenheit. So imagine that, right? So
Yeah.
super cold. So you don't really want to take your hands out of your gloves or your mittens and then snap photos. Like a lot of people, like you would literally take your hand out of your glove to try to snap a photo, and 5 seconds later, your hand is frozen. I mean,
Oh
that's
my
how like
gosh.
chilly that was. So with all that said, I never really checked the weather. I only asked like our guides what the weather for or what the temperature was in the morning. But the good news is, as the week went on, it went from minus 13 to minus 16, 17. And then like Thursday was more closer to minus 5. And then Friday was a
Oh.
warm spell. I think we actually started at 0 degrees that day. So
Nice.
it got progressively warmer. It didn't feel like it, but it did get progressively warmer.
Okay. And did you, so like with the lodge or not lodge, the lumberjack huts that you were describing, was that just curious there about the sleeping arrangements, was that like cots kind of
Yeah, it
situation
was.
or on the floor?
Yeah, some of them. So we were instructed to bring a sleeping bag, right? They did have cots. They had bunk beds, really, in
Okay.
most of them. But you know, some of them were nicer than others. It was, you know, imagine 13 people sleeping in a room together.
Yeah.
There was one hut where we separated a little bit because there was actually three or four different rooms, which was nice. But it didn't make sleep quality too great, and that was sacrificed with me and actually a lot of people throughout the trip just because of that. If you can imagine a whole bunch of people in a room and half the people snoring, and you're just
Oh.
uncomfortable. It's a little cold. Like the first night, Dina, like I literally, it was so cold in this lumberjack hut. When I got done with snowshoeing, I came into this hut, and I walked in the hut, and as I was breathing, I could see my breath, right?
Oh,
So
wow.
they had, you know, there were different types of warming opportunities, like fires, but not open fires usually. And it took a while. Like that first hut, it took, you know, hours and hours and hours to even warm up to be comfortable. But that first night, I slept with wool socks, long underwear,
Yeah.
pants. long base layer or base layer on the top, my jacket, my hat. Like I was all bundled up in my sleeping bag. It was so cold.
Ooh,
Yeah.
brutal.
I
And
know.
just putting the timeline, so how far in advance did you arrive? And then in advance of like the Monday when it started, how much time did you
Yes.
have?
Yep. So I left Colorado on Friday afternoon and I hit the ground in Finland. There weren't too many delays, but our last destination for the airport at least was Kittila, Finland, and I got there on Saturday night. So we arrived in the
Okay.
hotel, which was another town called Levi, at about 7 or 8 p.m. on Saturday. So it was a monster trip, and they're 8 hours ahead or 9 hours ahead actually of us. So it was needless to say, so I got there on Saturday night. Sunday was just kind of walking around this little ski town we were staying in, but my sleep was all messed up. Like I had severe jet lag. Actually, the entire week I had jet lag.
Oh, yeah. And so how did the food nutrition piece come into play? And I should ask too, I was
Yes.
wondering, did you all start around the same time, even though not a race or anything, but kind of everyone aimed to start the same time? Did they provide food for you, or how did
Yeah,
all
good
that
question.
go?
So we were provided every day, we were provided breakfast and dinner. And lunch was I mean, it was loose. Sometimes we had sandwiches. Sometimes they gave us a dehi or a freeze-dried meal, which we could talk about that here in a second, also. But we always were given breakfast and dinner for sure. And that was like usually breakfast. And let me just go down this road really quick because it was an interesting breakfast, right? So you had everything from deli meat, cold cuts, and cheese with different types of bread. There was fruit at times, not a lot of bananas, which was interesting, but and of course, coffee and tea. The mainstay was porridge. They would always just cook a huge pan of porridge. And of course, that typically my breakfast at home is either a smoothie, with veggies and fruit and protein powder and nuts and nut butter and all that stuff, or eggs and things like spinach and kimchi and all that stuff. It was pretty different. I'll have to say, like, I ate porridge every single morning. It was a little bland, so I usually ended up putting jelly in it, and if I could find a banana. But here's the thing, Dina. I think everybody, including yourself, knows that I am literally a peanut butteraholic, right? I don't know why I didn't remember this, probably because I haven't traveled to Europe in, I don't know, forever. They don't use peanut butter, Dina. And I was so sad. I was so
Oh,
sad,
I
right? I
feel your
know.
pain.
Yeah, right. And so I have a funny story with this, but with that, I mean, their, I guess, peanut butter, if you will, is all Nutella. And I don't know how you feel about Nutella. Oh, but I'm really not a big fan of Nutella. So I didn't use it. It just wasn't my thing, right? So it was, I don't know, it was just like,
Darn.
okay, I know, right? So my breakfast was usually porridge, jam, or jelly. Now my saving grace was they did have hard-boiled eggs. So I literally had like four hard-boiled eggs every single morning with a bowl of porridge and some
Okay.
coffee. Yeah.
I just want to clarify on the porridge. Like that's an oat base or
It's
like,
oats. Yeah. It
okay.
was oats.
Just want to make sure. And then was it just cooked in water or, and
It
that
was
was
just
it?
it was kind of like the Goldilocks and
Okay.
Three Bears porridge. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm imagining, ooh, like a big pot of schlop.
It was
I'm sure it was very nourishing,
pretty.
but
No, it was pretty. Oh, it was very nourishing. I mean, I was like, wow, I'm definitely getting my carbohydrates for today.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. So that's cool that you had at least a few options and not just porridge too, that you could pair it with some protein and kind of
And
flavor that
then,
up.
yeah, and it was like once I got the hang of it, it's fine. I mean, I like oatmeal, so that's fine. But I really like putting in a lot of toppings and a lot of fixings with it. Now dinners were interesting because depending on what lumberjack hut we were staying in, and depending on what our host would provide us, we would have everything from. Now I will say this: reindeer meat is very prominent in Finland. And in fact, their reindeer is kind of like cows in the United States, right? So it's kind of their main meat source. So we had reindeer everything from reindeer steak, reindeer kind of a shredded reindeer, if you will. I had reindeer heart like the last evening, just to kind of try it. So reindeer, right? And one of their famous dishes is actually reindeer mashed potatoes, pickled beets, and dill pickles.
Ooh, and that sounds good.
It actually was. I mean, I love, I kind of grew to like reindeer. And for those of you wondering what reindeer tastes like, I can't really describe it. It tastes light. It's not heavy. There's not a distinct flavor like you would think, like a wild game kind of a thing. Okay. It tastes pretty good. Like if you were to put that in front of me, I don't think I would even guess that it wasn't like beef, right? Okay. It was just like, it was really tasty. That was dinner for the most part, most meals. Now, sometimes we actually had pasta. Sometimes a lot of potatoes. They do a lot of potatoes there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I was pretty carved up, but here's the thing, Dee. I was so protein deficient most of the time, and I felt it. Like if you can imagine, I had 4 hard-boiled eggs in the morning and maybe some meat at night. There wasn't really a lot of protein throughout the entire day. And I was missing my protein. I'm not going to lie.
You could tell. Yeah. Were you just more hungry, or what all did you feel?
I definitely was more hungry. My digestive system changed a little bit. So my bowel movements actually became a little more frequent at times. Although when you travel, sometimes, you got kind of get clogged up a little bit. Yeah. But I did notice that, which here's the thing. When you're out snowshoeing or backcountry skiing or running, and it's 15 below zero, the last thing you want to do is stop to go to the bathroom,
right?
So I had to there was some strategy. You know how we kind of have to, like, if we run like an ultra or marathon or something like that, we're like, okay, where are the porta potties? Where can I stop? This was like whole next level, because you're like, all right, like some of the places, D, we went, like if you went off trail, it's 4 to 5 feet of powder. So you can't obviously go there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I kind of had to be very strategic in, let's just say, providing some more motivation to have a bowel movement before taking off in the morning. Cause I knew that I could not stop.
Yes.
Yeah.
These are things we don't always think about till we're in there.
You don't think about it at all. Yeah. Right?
It's not mentioned in detail by the directors or leaders.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Could you give us a time frame, like for some of the days where you did the snowshoe versus the Nordic ski, how long you were out there, and then how did that work with fluids trying to fuel if it was a longer morning or longer day?
So let me back up and say at least when I was there, it was starting to get lighter earlier and staying lighter later, but we would get lights. It would probably get light around 9 a.m. and then it would get dark around 4 p.m. So we didn't have too much daylight. Okay. So we would roll out like we're usually around 9 or 10. And depending on the activity, except for the day that we did dog sledding, then we came back and then we went snowshoeing. That was the only kind of double we did. But normally we would be out there between 3 to 5 hours. Okay. And of course, and that was me. They're all different ability levels, right? So for me, I spent usually 3 to 5 hours out there doing those activities. Now, this is what's interesting, right? So we had breakfast, say 7:30-ish. We don't leave until 9 to 10. You can kind of see where we're going with this because, as sport dietitians, we're like, oh, wait a second. By the time you've eaten breakfast and actually start your activity, there's about 2 hours that have elapsed. Now, what are you going to do? So you've got 2 hours and then you're out for 3 to 5 hours. So I think this is where you're going. Like I actually carried calories with me, which was a whole nother challenge because it was so cold, right? But so I carried my calories with me and here's what I normally did. And it depended on the day. Almost every day, except the dog sledding day, I would eat breakfast. And then about 30 to 45 minutes before I started, I would either have two packets of Yukan Energy powder. Yes, I did bring Yukan with me to the Arctic Circle.
Okay.
Or two Yukan Edge gels with some water, right? So that's what I would do to kind of preempt the activity. And then during any activity, I would carry one or two of my snack bite packages, my energy bites, right? So chocolate cherry was my favorite because it was, I don't know, just something about that. And then I carried one or two Yukan snack bars with me. Now, here's the thing, because it's so cold, you can't carry them really in your pack because that's exposed to the weather. So I had to carry them in inside pockets close to my core to try to keep them somewhat warm.
Yeah.
So what I would do is I did feel like I was a little bit undernourished during most of the days because it is very difficult to stop and in that weather to eat, right? Now,
Yeah.
I did, but I didn't stop as frequently as I was hoping to do.
Okay.
And literally because I just, you just, it's so cold. It's so cold. And nothing against, for or challenging of eating. It's just stopping and taking your hand out of your glove, out of your mitten, and just exposing yourself to that. You wanted as less skin available to the elements as possible.
Do you think there would have been any other options, like in hindsight, taking a different kind of food option or like the handling of that or storage, anything you thought of as like another solution?
I thought of this before I left and I was going to try it, but it wasn't logistical. And when I got there, I thought it was a good idea before I got there, but I was actually going to put three of my energy bites in a baggie and put them inside my mittens to kind of keep them warm. But here's the thing, on some of the days, like you have ski poles, right? And so that kind of, and my mittens weren't that big to be able to sneak that in. But I actually found, like in hindsight, I found that, and this is a shameless plug, but my energy bites were fantastic. Like they got cold, but when the energy bites get cold, they don't freeze, right? They just become a little bit, I don't even want to say crunchier, but it was just, they work beautifully, right? Even the Yukon bar didn't freeze because I kept it very close to my core, but I don't think I would change anything, to be honest with you. And initially I was thinking, oh, I'll just drink my calories. But here's the thing, D, I was so dehydrated every day. It wasn't even funny. Because
I
if you can
imagine.
imagine too, so I carried 1.5 liters of water on my back in my pack, because we're all required to carry water or whatever fluid. Like I did one bottle of water and one bottle of water with Yukon Hydrate, the electrolytes. We needed to carry a bivy bag, which is kind of an emergency blanket kind of a thing. We need to carry a jacket, like down jackets with us. And I carried two of those. We had to carry extra socks. What else? We had to carry, what else did we have to carry? I think that was it in our pack. So like my pack was between 10 and 12 pounds. So I tried to go as light as possible. But again, for the hydration, I didn't want to stop. I literally forced myself to stop to drink. But at that point, like you're not really thirsty, right? We've talked about that in previous episodes. When it's that cold, you just don't have an affection to drink fluids, right? So that was more of a forced drinking for me. And I'm glad I didn't kind of put all my eggs in the basket of trying to consume liquid calories, because there's no way I would have stayed fueled. Like I was aiming for about 200 to 250 calories an hour. Most days I did achieve that through consuming my energy bites and the Yukon bar, except for I think it was the backcountry skiing day, because it just logistics is so hard. Like I was in deep powder the whole day and I'm like, it's so difficult to stop. We did have a lunch break where we were able to stop, and that's where I kind of started to really put down the energy bites, because we were in
Opportunity for
a little hut.
feeding.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of, and sometimes you can plan that and sometimes you can't, right? And it's, I think that I learned a lot of great lessons with this.
Were your fluids then in the little soft flask, not in a bladder, in a pack?
No, so great question. So I carried Hydro Flasks. So that's a double insulated bottle. Otherwise they would freeze, right? Even in a backpack. So everybody had bottles like this, because of the double insulation, basically.
Yeah, I was, I'm just thinking of that hydration piece. What a challenge that is. Because even
So
then
challenging.
in the night, it's not like it's a toasty, warm, hut
No,
that you're in where you kind
no.
of like body temperature
Yeah, yeah,
re-regulates. It's still
yeah.
like constant chill throughout the week.
It really is. And here's, like, they instructed us to carry at least one bottle of hot water. And I'm like, what? I'm not gonna drink hot. What are you talking about? So day one, I was all cold water. Day two, I was like, all cold water. Day three, I'm like, okay, maybe I'll try this hot water thing. And actually, what I did was I put a Yukon Hydrate packet of electrolytes in there in hot water. I'm gonna tell you, Dee, it was such a great experience. Like it was kind of like tea. Like my mind thought it was tea. But here's the thing too that I learned. Like if you're drinking hot water when you're exercising when it's cold, will you consume it? Yes. Does it feel good? Yes. But you don't consume as much of it because it takes longer to drink, right? And you're not going to just stand out there for 10 minutes trying. So I actually found some issues with the hot water. So what I would do is in the morning on Thursday, Friday, I combine cold and hot water just to make it warm. So I
Okay.
knew I could drink it relatively fast. So that was kind of my trick. But here's the thing too. I didn't end up drinking a lot of water. I ended up drinking more electrolytes with my water because I did not want to stop and pee that much.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you the ratio of what your water to electrolyte, and if the electrolyte you felt helped, even if it was cold. And also, like, were you sweating, like
Oh my
working that
gosh, was I
hard? And
sweating? Oh my gosh.
so, like, all those pieces.
Oh,
So,
Dina, I can't even tell you. So yeah, the majority of it was electrolyte. It was the you can
yeah.
hydrate. Very, very little water during, right?
Yep.
Now I would drink water in the morning and in the evening, kind of. But that's a whole nother issue I had. But let me tell you, with it was amazing because I mean, so fluid wise was tricky, right? Carrying your fluid, drinking your fluid. But what was even more difficult is when I got back to the lumberjack huts. I want to talk about my sweat here in a second, but if you think about dehydrating yourself a little bit during the day, which most of us do, right? I actually do the exact opposite when I'm at home. So I try to front load my hydration early in the day and then decrease my hydration later in the day because I don't want to wake up in the middle of the night and go pee, right? So imagine this, Dina. You're out in the Arctic, above the Arctic Circle. You're out there for 3 to 5 hours. You're not drinking as much. You're dehydrated. What do you want to do when you get back to these lumberjack huts? You want to drink. You want to
Reload on
hydrate.
the fluids.
Yeah. And then I'm like, well, wait a second. If I do that, I'm going to have to pee in the middle of the night. Now, remember I told you earlier, we had outhouses. These outhouses were anywhere between probably 30 and 60 meters away.
Oh,
So to
gosh.
go to the bathroom, you had to bundle up, put all your clothes on, put your boots on, walk out in the snow to the outhouse with your headlamp on if it was night, because most time it is. And beautiful stars there, by the way. I did some of that without my headlamp, but just imagine that process of going pee, right?
I
Which I
mean,
had to wake up every single night to go pee because I
oh
was trying to
gosh.
rehydrate when I got back.
Yeah, what a pickle
Sick.
that is. Oh
It
my
was
gosh.
horrible. And that's why I like literally my sleep quality was horrible. I got 3 to 5 hours of sleep every night. It was horrible. But back to my sweating. You know this, but most of our listeners may not. I sweat a ton, right? And even in some of my trials here in Colorado, when we had some sub-zero temperatures, I tried my gear out and I was sweating so much. But when I was there, I would literally end the days, the 3 to 5 hour days, soaking wet. And I'm not even kidding. All my top layers were wet. My bottom layer, my merino wool base layer, long johns were wet. And I was freezing by the time I got back. So, you have to strip down, you have to change your clothes immediately, or else you're going to start getting really cold really soon. So it's quite a dangerous situation if you think about it, because like you have to constantly zip unzip when you're out there, right? Because the weather, because your activity, your expenditure, if you stop, if you're moving. That was one of the hardest parts for me, was like figuring out the clothing. All my gear worked perfect, but figuring out when I needed to do what. And that, I'm going to tell you, that was tricky. We only had one day of sunshine, and that made it even trickier, because then you're just battling, with clouds and the elements. And again, it's beautiful, but you didn't have that warming sensation of the sun. Not that it was really warming, but
Air quotes, warming.
more psychological warming. So yeah, there were a lot of challenges nutritionally and just from sweating and hydration and calorie consumption. Like it was probably one of the most difficult experiences I've had with nutrition during any type of event.
I mean, and there's so many layers day after day, the weather, the gear, the logistics of trying to access, your food without gloves on and not risking frostbite or other things. And then, like, the sleep part being night after night, rehydrate. I mean, geez, that's a long list. It sounds like it was a really good learning experience
It
along the
was awesome.
way.
I do consider myself a cold weather nutrition expert now.
Awesome.
But one thing I was worried about, and a lot of our listeners are probably sharing the same sentiment, is when you go somewhere, especially international, and you change the type of foods that you eat, there's a huge risk for GI distress, right? And that was one of my biggest concerns because I knew a kind of the foods I would be eating, but I didn't know it would be that many carbohydrates and such little protein. Mm-hmm. I knew that was going to mess up my system. Luckily, I managed it pretty well. I didn't have GI distress, but I did have some times like at the end of the day due to dehydration and due to just so many carbs and just kind of imbalanced blood sugar that I just felt a little different in the evening time. Now, thankfully, I had my energy bites and the UCAN bars and products because those are familiar to my gut. Yeah. But otherwise, it was really, really challenging only because I couldn't control as much as I wanted to control with my nutrition.
Yeah. Geez, yeah. I have to imagine the others that were there not maybe having the same knowledge base and experience as you suffered a little more or had a lot more learning to go through.
Yes.
So.
Everyone actually had come from a colder environment. So obviously Colorado is very used to this, not to that extreme cold, but cold, right?
Yeah.
And snow and everything. But not everyone, you know, I think only a handful of us were actually used to the cold and actually exercising in the cold. So yeah, I mean, I would talk to some of these people and it was a shocker for them, you know, not only environmental wise, but also nutritional, like what to do nutritionally. And I actually don't even know what many of the people did during the activities, you know, aside from, you know, our friend Linda Quirk and stuff. I mean, that was a thing that was kind of a mystery to me. It was what everyone else was trying to do.
Right. Ooh, fun, Bob. Sounds like, lots of good learning, lots of good experience. And,
you know, my most fun activity though, Dee, you want to know which one it is?
I have a feeling I know which one, but tell us which of all of the different events you most enjoyed.
Well, everyone knows, you know, we're from Colorado, so we have this beautiful landscape and playground. The one thing that just was such a joy, and I would definitely do it again, and because I've never done it before, is dog sledding.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right? Because, you know, I've snowshoed, I've skied, I've run in snow, like all fat biked. Yeah, I mean, all that is fun, and it's awesome if you haven't done it before, too. But dogs, so I got to drive a dog sled for 12 miles, Dee.
I mean, we might need a whole other episode on, we should have a guest on that, by the way, but anywho, I can't even imagine.
It was amazing.
What that was like.
It was so scary at first because we got about 5 minutes of instruction and then you're just kind of like, okay, go. And we partnered up just really quick. We partnered up and, you know, one partner would sit in the sled, the other would drive, and we switched halfway. But I once we switched, I actually had to go to another sled because the photographer needed to swap out a little bit. And so I ended up driving the whole way. So exhilarating. I mean, that was actually the day that I got most, you know, chilly because if you can imagine going pretty quick with these dogs and just like you're not moving, right? You're trying to brake and steer. But that was my most fun activity only because it was so unique. Never have done it before. I don't know if I'll ever get the chance to again. And no, I did not hydrate or eat anything because you were not allowed to.
No way. Ooh, yeah, I was just going to ask, do you have Iditarod on your agenda
No. That's a whole nother level. Like when you have to take care of dogs, like we only had five dog sled. I can't imagine. Like we talked to the guy who owned the place, like he races dogs and he races 12 to 16 dogs at a time. I cannot imagine having to worry about myself, let alone 12 to 16 dogs, right?
Holy moly.
Yeah.
That's quite a crew.
That's not on my to-do list.
Well, cool, Bob. Is there anything else you want to add?
You know, I would just say that listeners, if you ever get an opportunity to do something like this, and we'll put this in the show notes, the company that puts this on, they're going to continue to do this. I would highly recommend it. It's kind of like a bucket list thing. It's not a race. It's just an event, a fun event. You get to see a different part of the world you probably never go to. And it's such a beautiful time of the year. I would definitely recommend that. But if you do listen to this episode over and over and even reach out to me, because there were a lot of things, even though I tried to prepare as much as possible, I think I nailed my gear. But the nutrition thing, there were a couple slip ups that, you know, I think I just didn't plan for, and how can you without being there? So aside from that, I would just encourage anyone to try to do something and, you know, go out of your comfort zone a little bit.
Love it. And that's why we do these things too, Bob.
That's right. That's
right. Share the knowledge.
Yes.
Good. Well, thank you so much for sharing bits and pieces of your adventure. And gosh, I learned a lot too. And now have a new addition to the bucket list.
That's right. Next year for you.
Oh, that would be amazing. All right, Bob and listeners, thanks for tuning in. Hopefully, you got some fun. I was going to say golden nuggets, but they might be cold golden nuggets out of this one. And yes, we will catch you on the next episode. We hope you enjoyed this episode and stay tuned for next week. We've got a fun conversation with Kylene Bogdan. She is the performance dietitian for the Cleveland Cavaliers, also runs a functional sports nutrition practice. And so we get to hear about some of her experiences with the NBA team that she's been working with and what functional nutrition can do for you and so much more. So stay tuned for that one coming up next week. If you could take a few seconds to leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, it really does help us grow and continue to share our content with other awesome listeners around the world like you. And we really appreciate that. If you do have a sports nutrition question, send it on over to us at hello@insidesportsnutrition.com. You can also head over to the website insidesportsnutrition.com. You'll see a link there to drop an inquiry or let us know a topic that you would like us to do a deeper dive on. Or perhaps you have an idea for an athlete interview or other expert in the field of nutrition science, sports science. Let us know. Thank you so much. And hey, real quick, if you'd like info on the services that Bob and I provide, you can head over to Energy Performance to check out Bob's resources and services. That's energperformance.com. Or myself, Dina, over at nutritionmechanic.com. Check it out. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the hosts and the guests involved and do not represent a replacement for medical consultation with your doctor. The information and opinions provided here are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or medical condition. This podcast is for information, education, and entertainment purposes only.